You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with P. Elaine Sharp. She's talking to me from Toronto. Elaine, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Brainerd. It's delightful. Glad to be here.
So, Elaine, there's so much we could talk about, but I want to just get right into the show that's up now, which seems really exciting. And, of course, I can only tell through the Internet. I'm talking to you from the States and haven't been to it yet. But can you tell me a little bit about the show, what's in it, and a little bit about, that show?
Absolutely. Yep, pareidolia. It's this tendency of the human to project human qualities into objectivity in a way. So the show is called Pareidolia, and it's an extension of my interest, long-time interest in things that are vague, about projection, about perception, all of these aspects of both perceiving the work of art, but also having the work of art tell me something about myself. And so when I decided to create this work, it was already well underway, but when I decided to sort of garner it together and make it into a consistent narrative for me, I realized that the painting was telling me what I needed to see rather than the other way around. So it's not not directorial on my part, although I have the voice of authority in my studio anyway. There's this.
But the paintings were talking to you. You mean the paintings were talking to you and kind of leading you a bit?
Yeah, they absolutely were leading me. And I've found out some things historically since then about other artists, Canadian artists in particular, who've done similar kinds of things. So the exhibition consists of 20 paintings. There are three distinct groups within that the exhibition. One is Pareidolia, which is a series of five paintings that are large canvas, 72 by 48 inches. And the first time that I'd ever gone to that extent with having five canvases in my studio at one time and working on them consecutively. Now, ordinarily,
that must be so exciting, right? You feel like Helen Frankenthaler or something.
I feel like me, which is even more important. It's this really interesting thing that happens, and Gustin has talked about it when you leave the room, and you start out in the studio, and it's been attributed both to John Cage and to Gustin quoting John Cage that when you're in the studio that you have these paintings that you're working on, but in the studio with you, you have your critics and your curators and, all of the cast of characters that fill your life. And one by one, they gradually leave. And eventually, if you're lucky, you leave as well. So for me, it was that discovery of leaving myself in order to have this very intimate relationship with painting. I mean, painting is a very visceral pursuit for me. It's very sensual. It's about sense and desire. So these paintings that I was creating, both were being created by themselves, but also very much so by me. I'm a very analytical painter. I work in a very methodical way. I was painting wet into wet. Times there would be 50 paintbrushes on the go, because in order to get the kind of stroke that I'm aiming for, I have to have that ability to lift color, but also to draw color into itself. And because they're
right, and the stroke you're aiming for, there'll be images with this, but the stroke that you're talking about, that you're aiming for, because we're talking, in part about the five large works in the show, the stroke you're aiming for, and just correct me or add to this, is, as you're saying, very sensual stroke, but it almost looks sort of like creamy, like dessert, like, something very, I don't know, how would you describe it? Because there's similar forms that you producing in those paintings that have that sort of sensual, I don't know exactly what to call it.
Well, they're sensual. That's what we call it. I mean, they're very much about sex and desire and a stroke. There are so many things about painting that talk about this relationship to the body. And as an aging artist myself, I have body memory rather than body currency. And, there are kinds of things that happen as you age that not about sex alone, but also, the inability of the body to maintain the direction that you send it in. So there's
okay, so wait a minute. To stop there, let me stop you there for a minute, because you're talking about body memory, body currency, and those are pretty big sort of ideas that we could just explore on their own. Before we go on to the other works in the show, I just want to say, I know you had have a PhD, and you know, when you talk about body currency, body memory, is that at all drawing on a PhD? Because immediately that comes to mind, right? That's a very academic way, and one way to look at what's happening and really pull it apart. So just to have a quick aside to that before we get back to the rest of the show, was your PhD on that or talking about what you just said as body memory? And
the title of my dissertation was Being Vague. So it had its roots in a very different time in my life. You know, the PhD, as often occurs, took more than the 5 years that were originally intended. And the span of time across which I pursued that PhD, I began in academia, and I ended with no longer having an interest in being in academia. So, you know, there was a period of time where I refused the PhD. I didn't want to continue. And it was about this same sort of ideas that I was pursuing in my prior workings when I was working with photo and technology, where it was very much about discovering what people would tell me about what they saw in the work and leaving that open space for the audience to have its own perception of what I was making before I told them what the work was about. That's the thing that interests me as an artist, is what the audience perceives, not what I've done. What I've done, I know what I've done. There's an absolute knowledge of what I've done. And as I've said, I'm quite
analytical. But what is the audience perceiving? I mean that's interesting. Well, so let's to get back to the paintings, the five large works, which are, you know, sensual and sexy. I mean, isn't the audience perceiving, among other things, as you're making them, you know, a pretty sexy atmosphere? It's like a little orgy going on there.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing for me, the opening was just this past week. And at the opening, there are no program notes. I've made a point of no longer having program notes or writing statements. I find them extremely difficult. And, you know, there are a lot of problems involved with my
state. I applaud that, just so you know.
Well, you know, the fortunate thing for me is that my gallerist also applauds me and has said to me, you know, several times, you know, what would you like? What are there five keywords or something you'd like? I know you don't want to write a statement, and I'm not going to ask you to do that. So the statement was actually left to the gallerist, but also my son wrote an exquisite poetic encapsulation of the work, because he's a photographer. He followed in my footsteps that way. So
how old is your son?
He's now 31. And so he has all my photo equipment. He was the great benefactor. When I walked away from photo and technology, I gave him everything. And
he's so lucky.
He very, you know, and it was great stuff. It was not difficult for me to part with it, no matter where it was going. And you know, he kind of put his arm up and said, hey, wait, what about me? I'll take it all. So I gave it all to him. And so he was in here photographing my work for me. He was documenting the work, because I don't have anything. I mean, people think it's quite odd, but I've gone from having, you know, this photo studio that was dedicated to having absolutely nothing photographic. My camera, as a matter of fact, is my cell phone, and that's it. I don't have any sort of extra cameras hanging around. They're all gone. So he came in and he photographed the work. And, you know, the joy of having someone who has known me his whole life and has observed the changes that I've gone through and the differences that I've made in my own life, when he came to the studio and documented it, I said to him afterwards, you know, I don't really have anything to say about this work. I'm just wondering if you have anything. And he did end up writing this incredibly poetic statement. So the gallerist was able to draw on that. And I draw on it as well. I mean, he told me
so. Okay, so there's the five large works in there, and I really love that. Yeah, that there isn't that kind of text around there. And then there's what is in the rest of the show, because we haven't talked about that.
Well, the rest of the show, the most recent work and a prior body of work, but they've all been made within the past 12 months.
Are those
or
works
so.
On paper? Like, what kind of works are those?
We didn't have works on paper in this exhibition, although the gallery has shown my works on paper prior to this.
So all canvases, the rest is all canvas?
They're all paintings, but they're on different strata. So one body of work, Geologic, is a series of four paintings that were a progression of time and surface and adding more and, you know, disrupting the painting and erasing the painting and then adding more again. So it does become this kind of excavation of paint. And those are on birch panel, which is my preferred ordinary. It's my ordinary source, you know, so that's what I prefer to work on. If I'm working on a hard surface, it's going to be a painted object. And the next work is a series, I call them a group, actually, this next work, because they speak to each other and the conversation isn't finished yet. And it's called Pleasure Seekers. And there are currently six paintings in that group. And they are very much about this pleasure of paint and the stroke and desire. And I've named them again. They fall under the same umbrella of pareidolia. There is no specific human characteristic, but the paintings appear to have a sort of human nature to them, if you will. So they glance at each other, they leer at each other. In two of the paintings, there are two couplings going on. One is called Swingers, the other is called Bump and Grind. So, you know, there's kind of
how are those strokes made in those paintings? Is that with a those are those made with a brush or?
Yes, they are. I mean, at some points in the past, I've used my hands, but I find that it's, you know, it's not that satisfactory. I like to still have this critical distance of looking, which I find I can't do when I'm touching the paint with a very tactile immediacy. When I have that finger touch on the work, it becomes more, I wouldn't say therapeutic, because for me, art is not therapy, although it may have that for a viewer. It may have some kind of, you know, reciprocal exchange that allows for a calming effect, or, you know, some kind of relaxation or excitement or whatever. I mean, there's a sense that's going to occur in the presence of a painting, even if your sense is that you don't like this painting very much. But for me, to be able to have that critical distance and to have a tool in my hand that expresses something, depending on my choice of brush, bristle, distance to the painting, materials that I use, the paint, the viscosity of the paint, whether it's extremely liquid. So this body of work, Pleasure Seekers, is a very constructed painting. It comes very much, it's a very flat affect when you see them in person. You know, if I was looking the other way, you could run your hand across it and you'd feel...
It doesn't feel like there's a lot of surface on them, in other words. It's a very flat surface.
Very flat surface. I like a flat surface. I like something that has a sort of resonance that's more about gravity going into the painting than something coming out at me. And I absolutely love paintings that have this impasto. But for me, it's not something that I seem to be able to achieve. My achievement.
So let me ask you about, because we're talking about these details of surface also, about two words which also sound very sexy and sensual, yupa and flash. I don't know anything about that, but I love the sound of them, and I've heard you talk about them online at different times. So if that also relates, can you talk about what
flash,
those things are, and if I'm saying them correctly?
Yeah, flash is this incredibly exciting paint for me, and it was something that I was shown there. I did a studio visit back when I was curating, and I was not yet working with paint myself, and it wasn't in my future as far as I knew, but it didn't matter to me. I mean, there's still this relationship you can have with a work that is not your own kind of work, you know? So I did a studio visit with this artist in New York, and her paintings had this incredible density. And I asked her what the work was, what the paint was that she was using, and she told me it was flash. So I went to the store and bought some flash, and it's this incredibly opaque, matte vinyl with very few fillers. It's an artist's paint. It's not like a, you know, a domestic paint. It's an artist's paint. Very hard to get hold of. It's made in France. Le Franc-Bourgeois makes it, and I don't have a source in Canada. Just recently I found out that I could get it in one place in Montreal, but it is a very difficult paint to work with. Now, I don't know why I do this, but it seems to be my tendency is that I will set up something that I don't know is going to be difficult, but once I get the challenge in front of me, I have to work with it. So flash paint cannot be painted back on itself. So in other words, once you go in one direction, that's it. If you go back on it, you're going to ruin the surface. You're going to, you know, destroy the essential quality of the paint. So when I started working with Yupo and Mylar, which is both our plastic papers, they're manufactured papers, with extremely slick surfaces. When I started painting, I was
working with
oil.
It's a paper. Yupo is a paper, you're saying.
Yupo is a paper.
And how big? Like, how big are the sheets? Are they small? Like, what?
You can buy it in various ways. I buy it from the manufacturer, so you can buy it in, you know, stock sizes in the store. I think they sell pads of, you know, 9x12 or, 11x14, the standard sort of sizes of surface, and you can get it in a translucent or an opaque, and you can get it in varying weights. So I work with it on a heavyweight opaque white or a heavyweight translucent, and the translucent is, I think, 35x26 inches or something. It's a very sort of unusual size. But you can also buy it in rolls. So it's this really delightful paper to work with. And what I like about it is that if you work fast enough and you really don't like it, you can wipe it off. So it's, you know, it's kind of practical for someone who's just starting out, which I was at the time. Now, of course, I've worked with it long enough and with enough industry that I know that it will settle in and create a bond, and it's virtually indestructible. It was a paper that was made for outdoor signage initially. Mm-hmm. So, and it became, I think, a sort of watercolorist's dream or something for that exact reason. You could make a painting, and if you didn't like it, you would simply wipe it off and start over. So very rare that I would now ever, I mean, when I work now, I work with intention, but when I was first starting, it was great to do something for an hour, really dislike it, and wipe it off and start over again.
There's the pleasure seekers, but is there another body of work in there? I think there was one other thing we didn't talk about in your show, the five large works, the pleasure seekers, and then what?
And geologic, which is the excavated painted surface it's in the backspace of the gallery right now. But
and
yeah,
those are on birch panel too. Like what are the medium for all
on
of these three
panel?
Things?
So geologic is on birch panel. There are 18x24, I think. I don't pay much attention to scale, interestingly enough. But there are four of them, and then there is Pleasure Seekers, which are four of them are 30x36. The other two are 36x36. And the large scale oil on canvas, which is 72x48 inches. And, each of those presents their own challenge in working. For me now, it's funny when I look at a small, and I call them small, when I look at something that's 18x24, for example, that to me is a very petite surface. After having worked,
well, have you ever worked as large as those 48x72? Is this? Recently, have you worked than that?
I've worked larger than that, but one at a time in the studio. You know, I mean, my studio is a very large space, but it only has 8-foot ceilings. So the largest I've been able to work on to date, being able to manage it on my own because I don't have a studio assistant, was 6x8. So, you know, moving something like that around in your own studio, it's kind of difficult. So when I knew that I wanted to experiment with making larger paintings, and this is the other thing for me, when I'm experimenting, I use canvas. It's not my preferred surface. So if I know that I want to try something out, I try canvas, which, you know, usually it goes the other way around. People
Well, also, a huge birch panel would cost a lot of money. A 4x8 birch panel is I would imagine.
Not so much. No. You know, I have my sources, and it's probably cheaper than the canvas of scale. So, and I guess, you know, maybe birch is cheaper in Canada. I don't know.
Six by eight birch would be a lot to put together that much wood, wouldn't it? No?
No. No, because, you have
probably
to have
it's heavy, too. It's very heavy, I guess. Harder to
it's
move
heavy.
Around as well.
More than that, because, you know, you have to have it on a cradle, and the cradle has to be braced on the back. I mean, I love these terms of painting, cradles and strokes. I mean, it's very human, you know. The discourse of painting is very human. And this is the thing I found out when I was making that transition from working with technology and photo, which to me had become a very conceptually driven and very much above the shoulders kind of activity. You know, it was visual and it was about thinking. What people don't tell you about painting is that it's significantly further down in the body. I mean, it's below the waist. You know, it's a very wet and slippery medium, and as a woman, especially working in paint and working with large scale, it's never talked about. You know, it becomes this very sort of proprietary male artist domain. And
what is exactly? What do you mean? What is exactly? What domain?
You know, if we want to talk about George Bazalet, who says that, you know, women can't paint. And for me, that was a very sort of intense slandering of the potential for women to paint, because clearly, you know, women can paint and they make magnificent paintings at large scale, and they always have. And, you know, Joan Mitchell's work, Betty Goodwin's work, I mean, these are amazing paintings.
Where's Helen Frankenthaler? I keep mentioning her. It's not like I'm Helen Frankenthaler, right. Heroic, right? So you're talking about that notion that that's like heroic, but we think of it as this, and I suppose it is, because male artists get so much attention, but as this,
well,
as this male domain.
Thank you for saying male artist, because male artist is not a common phrase, right? I mean, artist is assumed to be male, and we have to defer to gender in order to separate to say female artist or women artist. And it's one of my pet peeves, actually, because I'm an artist first, and I also happen to be a woman, and there's no problem with saying, you know, I am an artist who is a woman. Why is it always this default to woman artist in order to separate from artist, which is male? So, you know, this kind of understand that I came to painting fairly late. And although I had always been an observer, I was not a participant in that realm. So I didn't know who the painters were that I would have liked to have known, if that makes sense to you. So when I started to make these large scale paintings, I began to discover, as often happens, people tell you, oh, have you seen the work of so-and-so? So it's been a really magnificent education for me. And at the age I am, it's wonderful to be able to have this education that continues, doesn't stop, that you have something that keeps you going to the studio and wanting to learn and wanting to pursue. So, you know, this idea that what I'm doing in the studio is very much about body memory, which we talked about earlier, and my memories of being a young woman with a lot of action going on around my body, and, you know, whether it was denial of the body, acceptance of the body, it doesn't really matter, but there's this kind of relationship that women have to our bodies that is not so freely expressed. So my capacity to express this in the studio with paint and to draw not only literally upon my current state of being, but also to step backwards and to recall and to have that incredible relationship with what we remember, you know, the phantom limb of early sexuality that stays with us even though it's not there anymore.
Nostalgia, if that's what you're talking about, and sensuality, sexuality go very nicely together, right? There's something about that relationship that's very attractive. It's not sad or anything. It's attractive.
No,
you know, our own nostalgia, even, you know.
This is what, you know, my summary of what I am doing in the studio is that I am pursuing pleasure. That is what I do as an artist. I pursue pleasure.
Elaine, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.